Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, we have a guest host tonight. We never have, it's rare that we have guest hosts, and we have one tonight, and we talk about him about every other week on this podcast, because he shares his opinion. He's a good friend of ours from the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association. Christian Hammaker is here. Woo! Welcome, Christian.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Please tell us a couple sentences about yourself, who you write for.
So we're going to be discussing the WAFCA Awards a little bit later tonight, and that's how we know each other. I write for Crosswalk.com, which is a Salem property. If you're in broadcasting, you might know who Salem Communications is. Crosswalk.com is my main gig. I also contribute to a blog at Pathios.com called Schaefer's Ghost.
All right. Well, we are very excited to have you here. I love telling Hannah your opinion, because you usually agree with me.
Exactly. I do. I'm very afraid this evening. I feel like I'm about to be ganged up on somehow.
But there are those times you two agree, and I'm like, yeah. Oh, you guys are just doing that to mess with me.
We are famous for agreeing on Book of Henry, of not thinking it absolutely sucked.
Wow, so that's had to bring that one up.
That's pretty rare. I've heard, I never saw Book of Henry myself, but I've talked to a lot of people about it, and you two are the clear winners, I think, the only people who really defend that film.
We defend it. Don't like it, but defend it.
So we're going to do our standard, we're going to talk about some films tonight, three in fact. It's like a director's trifecta of famous directors this evening. And then we're really going to get into the meat of what we want to talk about, the WAFCA Awards. The DC Film Critics just today released their best films of the year, actor, actress, all the way down. And we're going to give you our opinion on those, whether it was right, whether it was wrong, whether we're happy, whether we're sad. But first, let me show you the wine.
Yes, please do.
And I think you'll get it right away. We've had this before, but you will know why I picked it. Hannah, what are we drinking?
Oh, we are picking Dark Horse. So it's been probably about a year
since
we actually did the Dark Horse thing. So maybe because the winner of WAFCA is a bit of a Dark Horse?
You know, I didn't think about that. The winner of the WAFCA Award, which I won't reveal yet for Best Film, was, no one's done it yet. I think we might be the first Critics Association to say it's Best Picture. It's my hunch.
As far as I know.
But it's more of, none of my nominees really got through because I picked some weird stuff. And we all have our dark horses. Yes. We're going to get into it. I know Christian has his dark horses. It's called The Documentary Escapes. But I want to hear her hand as dark horses too, because she's a mainstream girl. Does she even have dark horses?
All right. That's fair. So it's actually a good wine. So I'm glad.
It's okay. It's not going to, I'm not going to write it.
What do you think, Christian? You okay with the wine?
Fine with the wine. I'm on glass number two, so it's pretty
good. You're ahead of the
game. We're in for a good podcast. All right, we're going to start out with the biggest film of the week, and it's called Darkest Hour. And it's original, but then again, I think I've seen it about three times this year. Darkest Hour is about Churchill. It's about Dunkirk. We've seen Dunkirk this year viscerally on the beach by Christopher Nolan. We've seen Dunkirk after the fact in their finest with British propaganda trying to spin it to lift up the public. And we've seen Brian Cox as Churchill. This is the fourth Churchill kind of Dunkirk kind of British blitz movie of the year. Christian, what is going on? Why are there so many of these?
Well, I've only seen the first of those movies that you mentioned, but I saw The Darkest Hour at Middleburg. Now, Middleburg was, when was that? Middle of October?
October.
And yeah, Dunkirk had come out when?
May, June?
June. July, something. Yeah, June. So it felt, even at that time, it felt close. But, Darkest Hour kind of fills in maybe some gaps from Dunkirk. So if
it
you
does.
Saw Dunkirk and maybe thought, where's Churchill? There wasn't a lot of Churchill. I love Dunkirk, personally, but I thought this movie was a nice complement to Dunkirk.
It is a companion piece. They fit well together. They overlap a little bit in time. Darkest Hour is about a month in the life of Churchill becoming prime minister, right into the British Army getting kicked out of France. Dunkirk is about 3 days, sometimes an hour if you're the pilot. And it's by Joe Wright. Joe Wright's kind of done Dunkirk once before in Atonement. He had that amazing tracking shot.
Great
Joe Wright, he's a very famous director, Anna Karenina. Hannah, are you feeling Darkest Hour here?
You know, I think we were in the minority, Charlie, in terms of having seen all four of those movies.
We did.
And so I think that I felt more Churchill fatigue and World War II movie fatigue than others who had not seen the other ones. And so I wasn't feeling... I knew that Gary Oldman was, you know, that delivered a great performance as Churchill. I knew that people would generally like the movie, but I was not all that enamored with Dunkirk. And so I kind of felt, you know, the two together, I feel like I actually would have liked Dunkirk more if I had seen Darkest Hour first.
You baffle
me. And so I could, that's new. So I could actually almost see myself going back and watching Dunkirk someday. With the context that I got from Darkest Hour, because Dunkirk was all over the place, that it was non-linear storytelling.
Which was intriguing.
Which was intriguing for some and not so much
for others. It doesn't get
as
linear as Darkest Hour, which actually ticks
exactly.
The days
and
off.
And so you have these two very different methods of storytelling. And so while I liked both, I was not blown away by either.
Dunkirk is a war movie. There's bombs, there's brains, there's the fog of war, there's friction. Darkest Hour is a period drama. It's stuffy, the rooms are smoky, and it's got Gary Oldman. And I'm going to go ahead and say Gary Oldman won the WAFTA Award for Best Actor. But I'm okay with that because I voted for Gary. I didn't nominate him. I didn't nominate him. None of my five actors got through, but I voted for Gary Oldman. Did I make a mistake? Are you with me on Gary Oldman?
You want me to talk about who I voted for the WAFTA Award?
No, well, I want you to talk about Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman was tremendous in this movie. He's had a tremendous career. You know, awards bodies like to give lifetime achievement awards sometimes for lesser performances. I don't think this is a lesser Gary Oldman performance. It's a very good Gary Oldman performance. And yet, I'm with Hannah in liking the movie, maybe not loving the movie, if I can characterize what you said that way. I actually blacked out after she said she didn't really like Dunkirk. I'm not sure I heard the rest of what
ridiculous.
She said.
Visually, I thought visually Dunkirk was stunning, but not...
To say the least.
But Gary Oldman is that he's one of those safe bet nominations and winners that... No matter what I voted for, I knew he was going to win. So that's one where I went, okay, you know, yeah, it was good, a good performance. But that happens all the time for me where there are these awards-worthy performances in movies that I don't think are necessarily that wonderful.
Well, all right, the last thing I want to say about Darkest Hour is there's another comparison to be made. Just a couple years ago, a Best Picture winner, we just saw King George VI. We saw Colin Firth play King George VI. He had a speech impediment. He still does here, but he's played by Ben Mendelsohn. Talk to me. Mendelsohn or Firth?
Well, you mean the amazing Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn was at
Middleburg.
I told friends I wanted to shout in the middle of his talk, you know, Mississippi grind. That's a great Ben Mendelsohn performance. He's a great actor, and he's good in this movie. I've seen some fans of the movie really gush about him. I have to tell you, when I think on the movie, he doesn't really come to mind.
No.
This is sort of my own personal test. What do I think of when I think of
the movie? He's not a big character. He didn't get a lot of time.
Really, he was good. I was glad he came to the festival.
That's right.
He's a great actor. He's fine in this.
He helped sell the movie. It was the opening night movie at Middleburg.
It was, yeah.
And so him being there to help introduce it and be there for a Q&A, I think did not do this movie any harm when it came to the WAFCA voting, because a lot of WAFCA people were at Middleburg.
You know, this feels like the opening night movie of Middleburg. It's highbrow, a period drama. Like, Mudbound was kind of like the centerpiece film, you could say, but... This feels like Middleburg's opening thing. All right, let's move on. Another huge director is releasing a film this week. Guillermo del Toro, The Shape of Water. Mr. Adult Fairy Tale himself. He's done it before, 2006, in Pan's Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. He's back with another adult fairy tale set in the Cold War. A mute cleaning woman, played by Sally Hawkins, falls in love with an amphibian fish man. I'm not lying here.
Is that right? To fall in love with a fish man?
You know what? It doesn't judge, really.
Amphibious alien sea creature.
Or a god. Could be a god.
Kind of.
All those things.
Some people, myself maybe are falling in love with this movie, maybe specifically with Sally Hawkins. I haven't heard anyone really say they didn't care for it. Hannah, I'm very intrigued what you think about The Shape of Water.
I really liked it. It was one that I watched just before doing my final voting, and it shifted some of my nominations.
Ooh, la, la.
It made it, it floated up into the, get it, Charlie? It floated up.
Are you talking about it?
The Shape of Water, it floated up. Oh, gosh. So, yeah. So it definitely struck me. It sticks with you. It's one of those ones that sort of, it's so original that you have to give it props. And the vision of Guillermo del Toro is really, it's definitely there. It's a beautiful film. The score is good. And it's in essence, it's a romance. So I kind of put it up there sort of similar to Arrival with Amy Adams, you know, where it's like, how do we communicate with this alien? And she has these, you know, this connection with this alien being. And so,
but she ends up having a connection.
Exactly. So the difference that will, and I think, Christian, you probably have encountered this in some of your recent writings about this film and the reaction that there are some things that will rub people the wrong way.
Make them uncomfortable.
Will make them uncomfortable with the Sally Hawkins character and with her. She's a lonely woman living with a gay roommate, and she's looking for human connection and human touch. And
did you feel uncomfortable, yeah. Christian?
I did a little bit
at the early beginning.
I mean, it's a little, well, there's scenes of her getting into a bathtub, mm-hmm. and
I'll get back to that. I'll get back to why he's doing that, by the way.
So this movie has been described as an R-rated fairy tale. I think that's a very good description of the movie. It's R-rated. So I write for an audience that is mostly religious, and so I have to be upfront about content. They're often interested in content stuff. What might I not want to see? Please tell me so I don't go see that.
Yeah.
And I give them that. But I try to give a bigger context and talk about the film's strengths. This movie is just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's such fluid filmmaking. It's so beautiful to watch. And Del Toro, if you've seen a lot of his previous movies, he's very acclaimed for, you know, his movies in the Criterion Collection, if you know what that is. I guess most of us do.
But, it's very impressive.
You know, The Devil's Backbone is a movie that is really beloved. I didn't quite get that one. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit it didn't really take with me. Pan's Labyrinth is one of my favorite movies, and I really have a soft spot for his stuff, even his stuff that is not as universally beloved, like Pacific Rim, big monster robot mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah, even I like that one.
Yeah, or Crimson Peak, yeah. Which yeah. I kind of love. Yeah. That's a gothic horror movie just because it's a triumph of production design. The story goes to some weird places in that one too, but this seemed to me to be, and I watched it late like you, Hannah, and I thought, this is probably the last major contender I'm going to see, and I have it all set. You know, I've got a year's worth of movies. I keep a list throughout the year. I firm it up during screener season. Here's the last big candidate, and boy, did it knock me out. I mean, it just floored me. It's a great movie, and I hope it finds its audience. I was pleased to see, I think, that the Critics' Choice group, I'm not a member of this group, gave it a lot of nominations.
Yeah.
And so do we.
Well, but not many from WAFCA. So I suspect that a lot of WAFCA people actually perhaps had not seen it.
It tied for the most nominations in WAFCA. It got 7 nominations.
Yeah, I feel like it got a lot, but it didn't get it in one certain category that I might be bringing up later when we talk about.
So you're right about the R-rated fairy tale. It's Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
But she's no Disney princess.
Nope.
She, unlike Disney, Sally Hawkins as Eliza has sexuality.
Yes.
She's this is a natural setting. This is a woman.
Yeah.
He's establishing this is no
woman with
she's
needs.
A woman.
And, a woman who's lonely.
Yes.
And it's deeper than fairy tale. I mean, knowing Guillermo del Toro, there are layers beneath this. It's political. He's a Mexican director telling us, don't be afraid of the other. Let's be together.
Right.
He color coded the movie. It's green and teal, except at key parts where it's red.
I have to be honest with you. I don't know that I picked up on that,
either.
But it definitely is green and teal.
It's all green.
A lot of aquas.
But it's red when there's blood, and it's
red
when they go to the movies. The movies are red seats and red doors, and it's kind of a love letter to cinema.
Gotcha. The main character lives above a
Lives Above a Movie Theater.
A movie theater.
I also fell in love with the movie. Why I fell in love with it was I fell in love with Sally Hawkins. Yeah. I had my five actresses, and then I met Sally Hawkins, and she became number one with a bullet. She has zero dialogue. She's mute. She acts with her eyeballs and her body, becoming the best actress of the year over people that have Shakespearean amount of dialogue. Am I wrong about saying Sally Hawkins is the best actress of the year, Hannah?
Not necessarily, because I agree with who we'll talk about as Wafka's choice for best actress was my pick for best actress.
I think Christian agrees
with
me. So
I think Sally Hawkins was number two. Like, I put her right behind the person who I think deserved to win and did win in this category. And I've yet to see Maudie, but I've heard that Sally Hawkins is phenomenal in Maudie as well. So this is definitely a big year for her. The acting is amazing, but a lot of what is conveyed can also be credited to the supporting cast that lifts, you know, her up with having to essentially sometimes kind of be almost like a translator. And
reminds me of Children of a Lesser God.
Yeah, and so you've got Octavia Spencer, who to me is just always the same. She kind of always comes off as a one beat.
She plays another cleaning woman, by the way.
Another cleaning
the
woman.
Help, if you will.
And then Richard Jenkins.
He's good.
Fantastic. As her roommate, is fantastic.
One of my favorite of his roles, and he has many great roles.
He has many. He's one of those ones who always delivers. But as somebody who can appreciate the fairy tale aspect of it and the adult romance part of it, the thing with the, you can't really, who knows what Doug Jones looks like behind his guild wetsuit. So you've got the sort of love interest is hidden, is truly, you know, in shadows and in this amphibious suit. So it is fascinating how you still root for them as a couple. So it is very Beauty and the Beast, and it's not like the Beast turns into a prince.
He turned, Guillermo del Toro turned the tables. Yeah. In Beauty and the Beast, Beast becomes a prince.
Yeah.
He becomes a man. Right. Here, I don't want to give too many things to me. Yeah. Beauty may become the Beast.
Yeah. And I actually equate it a little bit with Splash. So you had Splash as a comedy.
That's a great comparison.
So you have Splash
as
a comedy.
That's good.
So instead of Tom Hanks falling in love with this mermaid whom people are sort of wanting to then, you know, experiment on, you have the reverse. And you have the female who has fallen in love with this amphibious being. And so to me, for anyone who says this is just so out of the ordinary for cinema, it's like, no, actually, it's been done in different ways. And this is just taking it in a different direction, in a very original direction. But I would call it almost like a cross between Splash and Arrival turned into a R-rated fairy tale.
Christian, last word on Shape of Water before we move on?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, some of that stuff that we talked about is a hang-up. It's going to be a hang-up for some people, and I get it. I'm kind of a prude in some sense myself. I thought I was going to be hung up on it. But I have to say, what wins me to the film, not only is it just technically superb, I mean, everything about it is great, and I kind of root for Del Toro. He seems to have found a movie that could, you know, kind of be his mass movie, like that finally he found his niche. It brings a lot of his backgrounds, his obsessions with monsters and things in a story that has a lot of appeal, I think, to a potentially wide audience. And I want to see him get that audience. I want to see him maybe rewarded for that. But I think it's important to say that whatever hang-ups or potential things might hold people back, and I don't want to tell people to see a movie that's going to upset them, the story is about acceptance. It's about not, is this a creature? Is this thing where is this thing from or whatever? It's about how she feels, mm-hmm. how she's made to feel, how somebody, she found someone who looks past her deficiencies, if you will, and saw her for the inner her, who she really is, and she finds love. And I think it's just beautiful. I think that that's a universal theme or story that people will connect with.
Does well said. Sense? Well okay. said.
Absolutely.
All right, our third film we're going to talk about is probably the most famous director of them all, even more famous than Joe Wright, more famous than Guillermo del Toro. I'm talking about Woody Allen. Woody Allen is back again with his annual film. He releases one a year. Sometimes they are downright masterpieces. Annie Hall, most recently, in my opinion, Midnight
in
Paris.
We're going back away.
No, his most recent masterpiece is Midnight in Paris, by far. And sometimes you'll get mid-grade Woody Allen, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, you know, very good. And sometimes you'll get The Curse of the Jade Scorpion or Scoop, you know, just complete garbage. Wonder Wheel looks so promising. It's set in Coney Island, and it's in the 50s, the early 50s. And, man, it looks like... I didn't go to Coney Island in the 50s, but I guarantee you that's probably what it looked like. It's a hybrid family, not a nuclear family. They've already been had their first relationships and failed. Now, Kate Winslet and Jim Belushi are putting their lives back together, relying on one another to get through life. And, oops, Jim Belushi's estranged daughter, Juno Temple, runs away from her gangster husband. I'm a marked woman. You gotta save me. I'm a marked woman. They're gonna kill me. And Kate Winslet doesn't want to let her in. Jim Belushi lets her in. The hijinks ensue. I'm gonna say... I don't want to say what I say yet.
Well, I think you came up with a completely different storyline than I did. Because for me, it was Justin Timberlake plays this lifeguard.
What is Justin Timberlake doing in a Woody Allen film, Hannah?
Justin Timberlake shows up. He's a lifeguard at this Coney Island beach. And he's this dramatist poet wannabe.
Is he the Woody Allen character, by the way?
He is, and because he's pretentious, and you know, and so I do think there's some autobiographical stuff going on there.
Oh, we'll get to that.
But what I think this story is really about is it's a romantic love triangle, and it's Justin Timberlake gets involved with Kate Winslet. Character, and as well as with her stepdaughter. And so to me, that's the crux of the story. Where Jim Belushi is there kind of as the connector to all of these people, and I think his performance is excellent. I mean, if you ever saw Jim Belushi in Thunderstruck, you will really appreciate his performance in Wonder Wheel.
Yeah.
So that to me was the biggest surprise. But I found this movie just so flat, incredibly dull. So I thought the performances were all really good and it looked good. It, to me, was just boring.
It looks like a play, like it could be on stage.
Yep.
What do you think about that, Christian?
Well, it looks, I would say yes to that. I think that's true of a lot of Woody Allen movies. Character-driven, dialogue-heavy, usually not... a lot of multiple
Kate Winslet's
settings.
The opposite of Sally Hawkins. She's got pages.
Pages and pages and pages of dialogue.
Well, I'm just glad that you guys summed up the story for me, because here's what happened with me in Wonder Wheel. I didn't know at the time I saw this movie that I'd be talking about it. It was sent to me as a screener as part of the WAFCA Awards push that the studios do, where they want us to see every movie that they're campaigning for. And I put it on because, although I haven't liked any Woody Allen movies in recent years, I do like some of his prior stuff. Someone on Twitter, somebody I followed, said it was a beautiful looking movie. Anyone who knows me knows that I like beautiful looking movies, sometimes at the expense of everything else. My wife often says, "You don't care about anything but how that movie looks. I ask you what it's about, and all you tell me is who directed it and what the cinematographer was."
Oh, I can feel her pain.
So I put it on excitedly.
I'm on your side.
I lasted maybe 5 minutes before I completely zoned out. It looks good. I mean, it's this sunlit, beautiful, but that's pretty much the one look that I remember from the film. And once Justin Timberlake starts yammering at the camera, I just thought, breaking that fourth wall, I just forget it.
I am shocked at both of you.
Man.
Shocked at a plague on both your houses.
Did you like it?
All right, let me start with the cinematography. You're missing in when they're inside in their horrible apartment next to the boardwalk, and they're talking and the sun's going down. The neon red, the neon blue invades their bedroom, and it just permeates the people. And I thought that was gorgeous. Vittorio Storaro. He was the cinematographer in Last Tango in Paris,
he's a genius.
And you...
Yes?
All right. You mentioned autobiographical.
We have two people here, so you have to be a little more specific.
I'm going to get both of you. Did you pick up on it? And is he trying to tell us something? Justin Timberlake, the Woody Allen character, falls in love with the woman... and then falls in love with her stepdaughter.
Yeah.
Is he telling us something?
Oh, in terms
put
of
it together.
Woody Allen.
Put it together.
Well, see, so now the movie's even more disgusting to me.
So I didn't get the son who was the pyromaniac,
the
fire starter.
What was up with that? that?
I only heard one conspiracy theory on that. I heard that was Ronan Farrow.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. That was the one conspiracy theory I heard, because otherwise it doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit.
What is that kid
all.
Doing? And the Kate Winslet character I have a brief problem with. She was The Rock. She's in reality. She's a waitress. She hates her job. She hates her life. She's regretful every day of some past mistakes. This woman is hurting. And at the end, she has this abrupt shift. She almost loses her mind. It becomes Blanche DuBois from Streetcar. I did not believe for one second that character shift.
No. So I don't understand. What are you saying?
I'm saying I think this is middle of the road.
Great
Wonder
cinematography.
Wheel.
Don't underrate it.
I love
the rest of it.
How this film looks. I hate certain part of it. It's middle of the ground. So this is 31% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's the lowest Woody Allen directed movie of all time. No, it's not.
I think in your backwards sort of way, you're agreeing with me, because I actually said at the very beginning, it's a beautiful movie, but and has amazing performances, but it's dull as all get out.
It's not dull. It's not dull. I was fighting with it. I was engaged.
I don't like to fight with the movies when I'm watching. Yeah.
Engagement is good.
I was not engaged. I mean, I stuck through it, But I knew immediately, like, the difference between Shape of Water and then watching the screener of Wonder Wheel. Shape of Water.
That's a come down right there.
I immediately knew that one was going into all my lists. And
don't
I had
watch
to pay
these
more
back
attention.
To back.
But you don't have a choice. They were all.
I nominated this, by the way, for production design.
I did for cinematography.
Those kinds of awards are sort of, they're very personal in the movies that speak to you and that stick with you, but you also had just seen it recently, so sometimes that plays into it too. But, I love Kate Winslet. I mean, I thought her performance, sadly, I think I was a little more engaged in The Mountain Between Us with Idris Elba and Kate Winslet earlier this year.
I'm sure you were. I probably would have been.
And so, to me, it was just another Woody Allen movie, and I don't like those middle-of-the-road ones. I loved Midnight in Paris. Hannah and her sisters, I have an affinity for.
I wonder why.
Exactly. And Match Point.
Match Point is that's some heavy stuff right there.
That I remember really liking. Beyond those, I have not really liked any Woody Allen movie. I still have residual effects from watching Manhattan when I was a kid.
You mean one of the greatest movies ever made?
I should not have been taken to that movie as like a kid.
And I know about watching it now in the current moment.
Manhattan has changed in popular culture.
But I saw it in New York, and it was one of those things where all the New Yorkers went and saw all the Woody Allen movies.
Sure.
That's
what you did in the
70s.
They still do.
And they still do. And so there have been very, very few Woody Allen movies that I have embraced. And so this one, to me, it falls into that category of all these actors who really just want to work with Woody Allen. And they'll do whatever he asks.
And they will, because a lot of actors do the best work of their careers with Woody Allen. Looking at you recently, Cate Blanchett and Blue Jasmine.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they do great work, but these are not necessarily...
Jim Belushi, probably the best thing he's ever done and will do.
No, I agree. I agree. And again, if you were in the minority of people that happen to have seen Thunderstruck and still need to forgive him for
that's
that.
That's a reach back, dude.
This is one that will help you kind of obliterate that one from your memory. But I definitely just, I don't think many people are going to like this movie. And so when there's so much other stuff coming out, I can't even begin to think who I would actually send to go see Wonder Wheel over a dozen other movies that have just recently come out.
Send no one and do this instead. Pull up on your computer The Atlantic. Look up Chris Orr, one of our fellow WAFCA members, who wrote a fantastic essay not too long ago, October 2017, called The Remarkable Laziness of Woody Allen, and about how all of his movies for about the last 20 years are terrible. I mean, they're just getting worse. I mean, he does. Midnight in Paris has its moments.
Match Points within the last 20 years.
Yeah, but that's right on the cusp. That's a good one. And I actually like Cassandra's Dream, which came right after
that. Was fine.
A lot of people a lot of people don't like that film. That's about the last one. He has really
Vicky Cristina Barcelona, really? I mean,
I love a filmmaker that can crank out a movie a year. Robert Altman used to do this. I was a big Robert Altman fan. But Spike Lee does it, or at least he used to. But you know what you're going to get.
Tyler Perry does it.
You're going to get a good one every four or five tries, and you're going to get a lot of middling stuff. Woody Allen just seems like he's on a
Well, he's 82. You know, he's still trucking.
But I mean, think more power to him.
I'm going to miss when I don't have a Woody Allen film a year to see.
Really?
I like his films.
Are you going to watch this movie again?
No.
I'll never watch it again.
I'll never watch it again.
And it's for you. This movie is for you. For Charlie, I should just say.
But I'm a completist. I will watch every Woody Allen film.
Exactly,
you know?
And that's the same people who watch every Woody Allen film will probably go and see this one. And
their numbers are decreasing. That group of people gets smaller and smaller.
Well, they're dying off.
Yeah, they're dying off. And I mean, I don't mean to hate on Woody Allen. I just particularly did not like this film. It's nothing personal about his weird life and stuff. I mean, that's there, but. It just lost me right out of the gate. I can't even deal with the stuff anymore.
I would say instead of the 2 hours to watch this movie, go plan your next trip to New York and take a little side trip to Coney Island, have a Nathan's hot dog, and call it a day.
And read the Chris Orr article so you don't waste time on any of his other movies from the last 20 years.
Someone make sure to send this to Chris Orr, by the way. All right. The new releases are done. They're talked about. You know what you want to see. You know what you don't want to see. But what do we, as a collective DC film critics, and us three as a triumvirate, believe the best movies of the year were? And to do that, I'm not just going to come in out and list what was nominated and what won. I want to ask a couple series of questions. And through that, I think we will discover what the DC critics have done declared to be the best cinema.
I do declare.
That wasn't even in Mudbound. to be the best cinema of the year. So my first question is, everyone can make fun of it, everyone can disagree, but what did they get right? What was the one nominee when you opened the email, or the one winner, like, gosh darn it, you may have gotten everything wrong, but you got this right, Christian?
Okay, so Charlie, I wrote down that you wanted me to put the one I was most happy to see. Is that the same thing? Are we talking about the same
thing? You opened the email and said, here are the results, or here are the nominees, and you immediately saw this one. You were like, oh, yes.
That's right. So I looked over these nominees in preparation for this and that question, and I thought, what really floated my boat? And the answer is, nothing in particular. Sorry. But if I had to pick one.
Killing me.
If I had to pick one, I'll pick two, actually. The Big Sick as original screenplay. I think that's a fine nomination. Yeah. That was a very good film. Yeah. We don't get enough romantic comedies, and that one was great. And
did that
comedy.
Win?
No.
Oh, yeah. All right. I was confused.
It was a nominee. It was a nominee.
Okay. Are we talking about nominees?
Yeah.
Or,
no, either one. Either a nominee you saw or a winner.
He's
within bounds.
Gotcha.
We don't get enough good comedies, and that's going to get. We're going to bring up this Gary Oldman thing again when we talk about Best Actor and who I voted for. Which happens to be a comedic performance, and those don't get enough credit, and that's partly why I voted for it. But we'll get back to that. The other thing I liked was Best Animated Film. What Best Animated Film? Well, it wasn't Coco. I actually didn't really like Coco all that much.
This is a nominee you're talking about.
It's a nominee. Loving Vincent.
Mm.
And did you see it?
Nope.
No, and I'll tell you why it made it into the
nomination.
Nope.
And Christian, I'll tell you why it made it into the nomination list.
Because
because you got to number four, and we're supposed to give five.
You don't have
five.
To.
No, but people fill out, they round out their five with a stretch.
I resent that you.
That's not a stretch. It's not a stretch.
Maybe it was fourth.
But I
maybe
think
it was third.
My first was the breadwinner. So
yeah.
I knew it would be, and my first was the winner.
I didn't even like Coco either.
I love Coco.
It's a ripoff.
I loved Coco, and I knew hands down it would win, which it did. That to me was like one of those ones where it's an automatic. I don't even.
Which is a shame. No one really thought about it.
No. I think people thought about it. I think it was the one that you came out of watching and you went. Out of everything I've seen animated this year, Coco is by far the one.
Do you remember Inside Out when you just knew when you saw it? Good Lord. Now that is a movie. No one said that about Coco.
I'm not saying that Coco is as good as an Inside Out or a Beauty and the Beast or the ones that you know are just automatically these great, instant classic almost animated films. But I had not seen, when I think about god awful Star that I saw a few weeks ago.
she really did not like that movie.
I didn't even go.
She threatened me. She said Christian Hammacher should have gone to see this movie.
Exactly.
Probably should have.
And when I think about you know, I liked Lego Batman movie, but that was very similar to the Lego movie, so it didn't have that originality factor going for it. Cars 3 was, you know, Cars
But he's not 3. Wrong in saying Loving Vincent was probably, if we had saw it, would be the best animated film of the year.
I was happy to see that it was nominated.
Yeah. That's how I read this.
You're absolutely right. I'm glad, and I like The Big Sick. You know, I didn't love that film, but it was so well written. I liked that you noticed that. Boom, screenplay right on.
I nominated it for Best Original Screenplay.
All right, well, when you opened up the letters, here are the nominees, here are the winners. What did you see? Ah, thank goodness you guys didn't screw that up.
There were, first and foremost, while I love Sally Hawkins in The Shape of Water, my heart was with Frances McDormand from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And because I felt that her character just exhibits so many different types of emotions,
usually anger.
This film. But anger. That one. But there's a moment. There's compassion in certain points. There's frustration. There's absolute heartbreak. I mean, there's everything. She runs the gamut of emotions, and she says that there are things. You talk about how, you know, Sally Hawkins communicates without speaking a word. There's some of that with Frances McDormand in this movie too, and with Three Billboards. And so, hands down to me, that was the biggest relief, because I did feel that that she was the most deserving in that very tough category.
Were you nervous that she was not going to be nominated?
Yes, because I was
really?
So...
Of course she'd be nominated.
No, not that she wouldn't be nominated. Okay. No, I absolutely...
Oh, we're talking about winners now. I wrote winner slash...
It's both. They both work.
Okay, so
they
you're happy to see that she won,
so
not that she was nominated. Okay.
I interpreted it basically...
I didn't think she'd win. I thought Sally Hawkins was winning.
Exactly. So I interpreted the question more as, what was I most relieved and happy to see as the winner? Because from the nominees themselves, there were hits and misses. There were things across the board. This was one of the first years, though, where I would say that at least, I would say like 50% of my top picks actually did win. Hmm. And that's a very unusual stat for me with WAFCA. But I think this is a rare year where, because of Charlie and this podcast, I think I saw a lot more. I totally saw a lot more of these films than I normally would have. Including things like Best Foreign Film, which we'll get to. But so what about you, Charlie?
So when I opened it up, I'm going to talk about winners.
The winners that you opened up, not the
Because there were plenty of nominees that were, you know, that were, I don't know, none of my stuff got nominated. So, but some did.
I take as validation.
And the one, the ones that did get through, usually won, especially three of them. The one I was so happy is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri won three awards. Yep. Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Ensemble. Mm-hmm. You are right in all three, except for McDormand, who comes in second. But my favorite one of those is Sam Rockwell for Best Supporting Actor. Willem Dafoe has been winning all of these awards so far.
And rightly so.
Front runner in the Florida Project. He was great in the Florida, but Sam Rockwell, I think, was this year's Best Supporting Actor. I hope he goes all the way to win, because he, not only did he... he gave me the feels. He was so well written, and this isn't on the actor. His character arc is so complete from beginning to end. He starts out as one guy and gradually does become a different person by the end. And we all saw this at the same screening. The audience downright applauded in their seats when he finally does the right thing. Downright applaud. The audience was feeling Sam Rockwell. No one applauded at Willem Dafoe.
No, but I'll tell you, the difference for me, though, is my top nominee in that category did not make the cut at all, which was Woody Harrelson. And I thought Woody Harrelson's performance was equally, if not more powerful, in a much more limited space in this film, in Three Billboards. And so I think I've said that my fear, I'm almost relieved that he wasn't nominated, because I think he would have split the vote with Sam Rockwell, and one of these other people, probably Willem Dafoe, would have floated up to the top. And so I do think that there's certain props that should be delivered to Woody Harrelson. Sam Rockwell I love, and I think he's been one of the most underappreciated actors in the past 15 years. I loved him in like The Way, Way Back. I mean, he's always good. And so I'm glad to see him get some more recognition. But And I was perfectly good. I was fine. That was one of those ones where I'm like, it wasn't my top choice, but I'm okay with who got it.
And there's a Wofka connection with Sam Rockwell. He came to a junket during awards season. Every now and then we would get a real live actor who would come, and we come to a little reception, usually in Georgetown, and you got to meet and greet with the guy.
I missed that.
You were not there. It was for a movie called Conviction, I believe.
I love that movie. That was with...
It was quite good.
What's her name from Million Dollar Baby?
Hilary Swank. Didn't get a lot of awards traction in the end, but they campaigned for it, and he came, and we got to meet him. Several of us got to meet him.
And now you're telling Sam you didn't vote for him.
I did not vote for Sam.
Sorry, Sam. All right, the reason everyone...
Are we going to tell everybody, though? Do we go through the winners?
Oh, we'll get there. It's coming out.
I feel like we're leaking it out here.
And that's fine. You know what? We're going to make it stay to the end, folks.
That's right. That's why we have the wine cream.
Plus, you can already Google the answers.
Can you believe I'm almost done with the second glass?
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. All right, the reason everyone watches the Oscars or looks at award shows is because you want to disagree. You want to yell. He's like, you've got this wrong. Christian, you looked at the nominees, you looked at the winners, and you just could not. You almost threw up in your mouth when you saw.
You're going to be really disappointed. I once again didn't have deep emotions about any of the people who were. There were so many worthy nominees this year, and I felt like there's disappointment about some people didn't make the cut, but there was just not a lot of outrage for me about who didn't get in, and
but those who got in, you couldn't believe this person got in.
Right, and the answer was, I didn't really have that reaction about any of them. So I reread what you said, and it said, "Can't believe they made the list." And I took that as, what if it was, "Wow, I can't believe they made the list. It's a good thing."
That was the first question.
You're too positive for this podcast.
That was the most happy to see. I took this as the most surprising. Yeah. And I went with that, and I picked it. Best acting ensemble, best youth performance, it. Two nominations.
Yeah.
That's a great, that's a movie that made a ton of money. And everybody talks about how much money it made. And I'm not saying it's a awards-worthy movie, but it's a good movie. People aren't talking about why it made a lot of money. It's not just that it has some effective scares in it, but it actually, I don't know if your experience was the same, it conjures up, it takes you back to those junior high school years, and there's things that you're afraid of, hopefully not scary clowns in the sewer near you guys.
We all have our things.
We all have our things. The bullies or people, it's kind of a queasy feeling, but it's effective, and you know that the film is working. It's doing something to you. And a lot of horror movies, they want the cheap thrill or something. This movie, I thought, was better than that, and I'm just glad that we gave it a little.
I was shocked. Those kids are good, and I was shocked to see this. I didn't even think about it.
I didn't even cross my mind.
I put one or two of the kids.
I nominated one of the kids for best youth performance.
What you're saying, Charlie, it was one of the big surprises.
It was. I was shocked to see it.
That's how I interpreted this category.
Didn't even cross my mind to put it on there.
I'm glad that it floated up there.
There it is.
Sorry. Because I do think that's one of those ones that just people sort of forget about when they're inundated with all these other awards movies. But that brings me to my biggest outrage.
Yes. Now we're going to get into it. What did you see?
Patty Jenkins should have been nominated for Wonder Woman for Best Director. Oh, and if I'm looking going, and I love Greta Gerwig.
This is the next question.
I don't care if I'm going out of order.
No, because Patty Jenkins is not a dark horse. If you direct a Marvel movie, you're not a dark horse.
This is an outrage to me because I think as much as I love Greta Gerwig and I got to meet Greta Gerwig, I do think from the standpoint with Wofka, I do think that some of the people are swayed by the much same way they might have been swayed by meeting Sam Rockwell. I think people are swayed when actors and directors go out of their way to do those junkets and to meet with as many people across all these different places as they can. And so I think that's how Greta Gerwig ended up.
That's why politicians campaign.
Yes. And so if I looked at among the nominations for Best Director was Greta Gerwig, and I would have replaced her with Patty Jenkins, because I think that what Patty Jenkins accomplished with Wonder Woman went even beyond the film itself. It was like, here was this woman director taking the helm of a huge superhero movie, and it got, you know, people loved it. It was seen by tons of people, and I just think that that for her to have been left off of that list this year, regardless of whether she would have won it, I think she should have been on the list.
I didn't even like that movie very much.
Well, that's... But, none of your nominees made the cut.
No, my number one best director didn't make the cut. It was Martin McDonagh for Three Billboards.
That was a surprise.
And he didn't make it, but I voted for the winner, Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk.
And I knew Christopher Nolan was likely going to win, so that's why I wanted Patty Jenkins to be in the mix as a nominee, even though I knew that Christopher Nolan would ultimately win for Dunkirk, because Dunkirk is one of those movies that when you see it, you're like, oh, it's beautiful and it's huge, and the director really was responsible for this filmmaking, as you would call it with a capital F. And so I just felt that Patty Jenkins was shunned.
I had no idea that Christopher Nolan was going to win. I mean, I know he's in the conversation, and yes, I voted for him, but I wanted to vote for Guillermo del Toro. Now we're getting into the best director.
Wait a minute, Christopher Nolan. Yeah, he won. Okay. I couldn't remember the second award of that movie that won the best picture.
Right. But anyway, I don't know why you were so... considering what won our best picture, which we'll talk about later, I'm always surprised when the best picture, the best director is not...
It's weird that the best director does not make the best picture. It's weird when that happens.
But it can be kind of fun, but it's a little surprising.
It happens with something else, too, that was another sort of mini outrage for me, was the absence of Mudbound from the best picture nominations. And so Mudbound, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit here with our awards winners, but Mudbound ended up winning for best adapted screenplay. And it did not... How can the best adapted screenplay not be a contender?
She got director nomination
picture.
Too.
But it doesn't matter. I'm like, here you're saying this is the best adapted screenplay.
It means she didn't make a good movie, is what that's saying.
But that's, they're saying...
It means the script is great. The dialogue is great.
I don't know how they interpret that, but I feel that with a lot of these, I think there was a split vote that then just floated other things up to the top that might not have otherwise won.
I nominated Mudbound for a screenplay.
I nominated Mudbound for screenplay, maybe, but I also nominated it. I think I put it in my nominations for Best Picture, and it did not make that cut. And so I just felt when I saw that it had won Best Adapted Screenplay, a part of me was like, how can the Best Adapted Screenplay not be considered a Best Picture contender?
So you were angry that it won Best Adapted
Screenplay,
even though you wanted it to win Best...
No, I'm glad it won something. Yeah. I was relieved that it won something.
Right.
Because honestly, it's not going to win any Oscars, so get it now.
I don't know.
I liked it, but it's not going to win an Oscar.
I don't know.
It might win adapted screenplay, but other than that, that's about it. Honestly, is there another category you can see Mudbound winning an Oscar?
I can see it nominated in several.
Mary J. Blige might get a nomination.
Yes. No,
it might squeak an accidental cinematography nomination.
Yes.
It might get nominations.
It's not going to win.
I don't think it will win necessarily, but it will be a dark horse like your wine if it does happen to win. But I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, after I somehow crawled out of bed after learning Blade Runner 2049 only got nominated in the technical categories and not anything major. Which I did not. And after I recovered from my heart attack knowing that Wafka nominated the dreck called Despicable Me 3.
Yeah.
Can't believe that got a nomination.
I told you, they were stretching. People were stretching.
I was going to put that one on there, but I never actually watched Despicable Me 3, so I didn't
save
feel
yourself,
like
sir.
I should vote for something and say I'm
terrible.
Outraged when
you
I
You hated that movie. Don't even defend that movie. You hated it.
There were elements of it that were cute, but it was overall, does not belong in
But
the
that is not my biggest what is going on here. I want to go back to the Best Ensemble category.
Yeah.
I love that it won, and I love that it was nominated. I love that Mudbound was nominated, The Post, and Three Billboards. Actually, Three Billboards won. It didn't win.
Right.
But what is Dunkirk doing on Best Ensemble?
No.
It's a war movie. There's this little dialogue
in
Dunkirk.
Harry Styles in it.
It's
gone.
You can't.
Get
you know,
your boy
it's not about
mojo going.
They're
here.
Not acting.
Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh's on the pier doing Shakespeare. You got a pilot mumbling in the cockpit. You got the boys running around all over. Just not an ensemble.
If you can't say Sally Hawkins is so great with no words, and then say Tom Hardy wasn't great.
He didn't. No, he wasn't. He did. He's just a man.
He had just his.
He's a machine.
His eyes there.
He's a machine.
And that was a performance. Of course, I liked his character.
He didn't. No, he didn't have a performance. He was just the guy in the cockpit going, you know, maneuvering the plane. The performances were the boys on the beach and Branna going above and beyond on the pier. This is not in an acting ensemble film. Just not.
No, I agree. Sure it is.
Oh, now I'm gonna fight. So Mark Rylance is great.
The only acting is on the boat.
Are we pronouncing that right?
Mark Rylance and Cillian Murphy.
That's right.
They act.
Cillian Murphy.
And Mark Rylance, I nominated Mark Rylance.
Did you?
I did. Doesn't make it an ensemble.
No, it's not an ensemble.
With Branna, with Rylance, with Harry Styles.
Yes, they're all in their separate part, separate days, that's separate right. hours, separate parts.
Tom Hardy.
They're
this
not.
Is an ensemble.
There's no interaction.
Yeah,
and it's usually
agree.
Guys just ducking their heads in the sand or underwater. It's not an ensemble.
Yeah, I can't even remember what I actually put for best ensemble because I think
now I'm mad I didn't vote for it.
because sure three billboards.
I have a point to me.
I'm sure that would have swayed the whole thing, but that's why I was relieved that Three Billboards won best ensemble because to me that was sort of a way of interjecting the Woody Harrelson and the fact that they all did that. This movie really was so powerful because
it's a perfect winner. Perfect winner.
Yes.
Three billboards. And I'm fine with the other nominees. The 4 out of 5 nominees. Dunkirk just stuck in my craw for whatever. All right, moving on. Your dark horse. You'll open up the nominations. You're like, I can't believe, I don't know, this entire movie was forgotten. Where was it? Christian, where was it?
What
Hostels.
Oh,
it's got to be Hostels.
No!
I've been dying
oh
for
God,
that since
no.
you invited me onto the show to unleash that on Hannah.
Oh.
He's been waiting for that
we
all
saw
day.
We saw this at Middleburg. Oh. We were not sitting together. She was with a group of friends. I was by myself. I kind of liked it.
There's your first clue.
And then I find out in subsequent discussion, Hannah says, did you see Hostels? We all hated it. What?
And it was the surprise film. You didn't know it was going to be Hostels.
I don't know if
it was
a surprise.
It was the to-be-announced film,
well,
I
mean,
think.
We knew.
They knew by the time
knew,
we got there.
But before we got there, we knew.
Because it wasn't on the schedule. Like, you had to go almost in blind a little
bit.
No,
we knew about a week or so before, but... But they threw that one in because also one of the filmmakers
yes.
was local.
Yeah, Scott Cooper's
so
from Virginia.
So his whole family, so of course people are going to applaud politely because he's, his family's in the audience. But no, that was, and I think it was because we saw Hostels at the end of a long day of very good films.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was disappointing. Mudbound was shown.
It was after Mudbound. Yeah.
Right.
I didn't see Mudbound there.
And Mudbound was so much better. And mm-hmm. so to have seen Mudbound as the 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
second to last screening, and then for Hostels to be given the spotlight mm-hmm. of the 8 p.m. screening, and for us to then come out of that and just be like, that was distressing. And I normally really like Christian Bale, but I did not like that movie.
Yeah, he was quite good in the movie, I thought. Maybe not an awards.
I love that you got so... It just warms my heart that
yeah.
you upset her
so,
like
so
that.
So the real answer love was, it. I wasn't shocked that Hostels didn't get nominated. I liked it. I didn't think it was necessarily going to be a big awards contender. So are we talking about what film didn't get nominated in a certain category, didn't win? I'm sorry to keep...
Well, no, it's totally up to you, but I'm envisioning where you opened the list... And it didn't show up once.
Oh, it didn't show up once.
Or the one that, or maybe it showed up, or just in the wrong category.
It was not in the Best Picture category.
Hit me.
And The Shape of Water.
It wasn't. You're right. It was not.
It was
the Best Picture omission.
Every conceivable category
yeah.
could have been nominated.
That's not a
before.
Dark horse film.
No, no. Okay.
Shape
sorry.
Of Water. I mean.
So let's talk. Since this is Charlie and Hannah's podcast with an emphasis on Charlie, let's talk about the best foreign film.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Where was
oh,
Loveless,
God.
Which I also saw at Middleburg, which is a masterpiece. I'm sorry if people don't think it doesn't give them all the feels.
Brother,
it's
no one else saw it.
Tremendous.
No one else saw it.
But
that's
it was
why
sent
I didn't
to,
make it.
It doesn't. Why? It was sent to us. Screeners. We get screeners.
It was sent soft copy. And if you're sent soft copy and I have a pile of hard copy.
It was hard copy.
I don't have a hard copy. I don't know. I don't know how you got a hard copy. I don't think I have a hard copy.
No, we got one. We did.
It was in a bundle.
There you go. When it's in a bundle, it's buried amidst all these other movies. And you go, unless somebody tells me that this one is more phenomenal. And nothing personal, Christian, but just because you loved it.
I said it was phenomenal, and you didn't go put it in your DVD player that night.
But that category bothered me. The best foreign film
category. Thelma was nominated.
It was nominated, but and so was my favorite, In the Fade, was nominated.
Yeah.
But I, on and along with The Square and Angelina Jolie, First They Killed My Father. Yeah. And so I believe that the reason that the winner of that particular category was BPM, Beats Per Minute.
Yeah.
I think that only won because everything else split. I think you had people who loved In the Fade, The Square, and Thelma. Mm-hmm. And they all got divided up, and suddenly Beats Per Minute rose to the top when it really shouldn't have.
You know, a lot. I guarantee, I saw all five of those films, and I guarantee you not many WAFA voters did.
No, I agree.
Did you see Loveless?
Nope.
And did you see In the Fade?
Yes,
Kristen?
I saw it.
I loved In the Fade, and I did not see it in Middleburg, but I watched it, the screener, and that suddenly, that immediately kind of jumped right in. And I, oh, that my favorite foreign film really was The Divine Order.
Which you didn't even want to watch. I had to force you to watch that.
But I did, and I liked it, and so that to me was missing. So that's what.
Were we sent that one?
Yeah, or no, I think we were just sent the link.
We at least got a link.
As a link.
But the link was part of its release. In general,
like we had to ask for the link because it was released already.
It wasn't about a screener for the awards contention. It really was about watching this film because it was being released, and so that this whole category of best foreign language film, I take the winner always with a grain of salt because I do believe that it's a matter of split votes and people have their preferences and they've only seen. A few of these.
Well, I'm not in love with any of those nominees at all. I like Thelma the most, got my vote, but I don't love any
of them. Didn't you like Graduation from Romania?
I didn't see Graduation.
I did like Graduation. In fact, I think I didn't see that at Middleburg last year, but I caught up with it.
Yeah. It did not get nominated.
That was a heavy hitter, man.
Great movie.
You know why? It's just come out so long ago. Like, people saw that forever.
But they campaigned for it a little bit. Didn't they send us a...
Did they send it out again?
But again, when it comes in the midst of a bundle and you're
foreign
getting...
film's tough. There's a lot of American films to see. And, you want to get into the foreign films. You do, but they're second tier a little bit.
I feel like sometimes, I can't say for sure, but I will prioritize that category and sometimes documentary.
And I know that about you. I love when you do that.
Yeah, because they are often... more rewarding, frankly. Yes, this is the snobbiest comment ever. So Hannah's just going to cringe. And some of the major awards contenders, I find over the years, I think back on some of the foreign films more than I do on, you know.
Well, the last film I saw before voting was, nominating was A Fantastic Woman. That was my final film. And it made my list. Bumped something else off. And Daniela Vega almost made my list because she was good. But, Fantastic Woman was a great movie.
Did it get into... It didn't get onto our...
It didn't get
into
it. Okay. All right. I open up the nomination list, and I can't believe... Where is Wind River?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Yes.
Best Picture, yes. Jeremy Renner, cinematography, screenplay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where... Taylor Sheridan.
Did they...
We got a screener.
They did? Okay.
They did, but... And that was one that I think just... came out at a weird time.
I was shocked. Taylor Sheridan was... Last year, 2 years ago, favorite film, Hell or High Water.
Mine too.
And also about neglected people in barren surroundings. And Sicario, my favorite, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
But Wind River knocked my socks off.
I believe that's one that fell through the cracks.
I can't believe it didn't pop up anywhere one time.
I voted. I tried. So between you and me, we actually had some. We nominated Wind River for a couple of things.
I was bummed. I'm really bummed to see that.
That is definitely...
I understand that Good Time... I love Good Time. I nominated Pattinson and it for Picture. But I understand just as many people hated that movie as loved it. In fact, maybe more hated it. I get why it wasn't on there. It didn't upset me.
Those would be the wrong
people. But everybody loved or at least really liked Wind River.
Yeah, no, I agree. That did.
So now I feel shamed because here I shamed you guys for not watching Loveless. I watched Wind River and I have to confess I didn't even think... I liked it quite a bit. Didn't even really cross. It's on my running list of like movies that I keep separately, but I think it's a little bit further down maybe than it is for you guys. And it just didn't cross my mind.
It's right up there I didn't think about It for Ensemble. It's
exactly.
Didn't cross my mind.
Right. There's this whole
it was
group,
a good film. Really
there's
good.
There's this whole group of movies that come out early in the season.
Which is why you got to keep your list from the beginning.
No, but it doesn't matter.
Keep your list. What good did that do me? It was on my list.
It doesn't do us any good to keep our lists when everyone else's lists are still different or they don't put it on their list. Yeah. And so I do think that what happens is we always end up this way near the end of the year with award season. And suddenly you forget about anything good and good performances that happened earlier.
Which is shocking why our best picture turned out to be a movie that was released in, what, March?
Yeah.
In March?
Yeah.
How shocked were you to open up the winner's list and you saw Get Out is the best picture of the year? I'll call that a fine compromise win.
Yes.
I didn't love the movie as everybody else did, but I really, really, really liked it. Happy to see it. Glad it wasn't Lady Bird. Sorry that it wasn't Three Billboards. I can live with Get Out. Christian, can you live with Get Out?
Certainly. Didn't get my vote. I voted for Dunkirk. Shape of Water wasn't on the list. Some of my other, really the best film of the year and the best actress of the year, we all know, is Personal Shopper and Kristen Stewart.
Oh,
so I don't know why. At least
you're
not going to get nominated.
You're going to set her off again.
So, right after Hostels, that's right up there. Without that to vote on. I'm fine with Get Out, although I'm in your camp, I think, Charlie. As I saw it, it was a few weeks into the run. It had gotten so much attention. I said, you know, it sounds like my kind of movie, kind of a genre. And I have a lot of different kinds of movies, but I have a soft spot for John Carpenter movies, horror, maybe a little sci-fi, a little strange. And this had gotten some comparisons, and I thought, and people said online, go see it with a mixed crowd if you can. What does that mean? Well, try to see it with a racially diverse
crowd.
Which we did.
People had these stories about the intense crowd reaction. So I went out on a Wednesday night to Rave Cinema or Cinema Deluxe or whatever it's called in Fairfax. It changes its name every year when I go back. It has a new owner. And it was Wednesday night. It was $5 night.
Mm.
So I plucked my, and it was a good crowd for, because that $5 night brings out the crowd. And it was a mixed crowd. And I expected a little bit more from, I don't know what I expected. Thought it was maybe going to elicit more audible response in some way, more crowd reaction than it got. So that was a bit of a letdown, but I just tried to evaluate the movie on the screen, and it was very good. It lost me a little toward the end, though. I was a little confused about what was happening. It peaked with the revelation, I don't want to give anything away, of a certain somebody being in on it, if I should say.
That's fine. You can say that.
And
somebody
I thought
that
was
in
a great twist. It worked well for me. But after that, I don't remember much about the movie. And there's quite a bit that happens after that you find out.
Well, we saw it with a mixed crowd, and our audience lost their minds. I think I actually saw people get up and roll in the aisle.
That's what I expected.
They lost their mind. In fact, I lost my mind. I got into this movie. I was shocked. Good. I was hooting. I was hollering. Because people were loud, and they were. It is an audience film. This is not a movie you sit down on a quiet Saturday night and watch by yourself. You just won't get the impact.
Maybe Wednesday night, $5 crowd,
no,
not the right crowd.
And I think that's the difference, is we saw it before you knew anything about it. So you were truly going in blind. And I think that's what made Get Out so surprisingly good, was that I remember coming out of that movie and just being like, oh my God, I don't know exactly what was going on there, but that was crazy. I mean, you did. Your view was, that was crazy.
Crazy in an amazingly awesome way.
Yeah. And so it definitely is one of those ones that I'd kind of forgotten about. And I accept it the same way you do, Charlie, as a compromise win. Yeah. It was not what I voted for. But I do think that because of all the other nominees, it's another one of those ones where you split the vote among all these others, and you end up suddenly with Get Out being the surprise winner, because that's just what was left that rose to the top as well. And when I thought back to it, I was like, wow, I really like that movie.
The biggest surprise for me is that it was opened in March, and I remember the WAFCA buzz. Everyone was talking about it and how much they loved it, and the buzz didn't fade.
Right.
They kept it.
Yeah.
That really surprises me. It usually doesn't happen.
And it's important for our little band, our little Washington band, to, you know, this, I think, helps get the movie. It's in the conversation, but it's exciting. We can give a little push to a movie. It's not the expected
pick. It's an out of the mainstream pick.
And I like that. But it's not a movie that's out of the conversation. It's not out of left field.
But The Post has already won a big one. Call Me By Your Name won a big one. Shape of Water won a big one. Get Out hasn't won a big one. We're not a big one. We are not a big one.
Yeah, we're not a big one.
But we are a one. Yeah. So now Get Out has won one.
Yeah, and I'm happy for that because I still like, I love Call Me By Your Name, but that's going to be somewhat divisive. It's kind of like Moonlight, where some people are going to like it, some people are not.
And Moonlight didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, it didn't win anything.
Right, and then it suddenly becomes, even though I still think La La Land should have won over Moonlight.
Move on, Hannah.
But exactly. But I think Get Out to me was a surprise for me to see that won, but good for WAFCA overall. And the other one that I was really happy to see that we had touted on Twitter yesterday, the day before the awards were announced, was that we knew that we wanted Baby Driver.
Yeah.
Best editing.
Baby Driver, best editing.
That needed to get in there somewhere.
And Edgar Wright, thank you for retweeting WAFCA. We saw that today. Thank you, sir.
And I felt a little bit of like maybe we had something to do with him even knowing about WAFCA.
Have no doubt.
But so Baby Driver was another one of those earlier in the season that a lot of people kind of tend to forget about, but was just a great movie as well. And so I'm just glad that got something.
I just can't believe Kevin Spacey wasn't nominated for Best Supporting Actor in that movie. Was there something that happened?
Right.
You know what? She's right. It was released too early.
Yeah,
too
that's
early.
Probably what it was. It's usually what it is. It just fell out of it.
But I've heard good things about his performance in this upcoming film.
Color of Money.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, All the money.
I've heard really good things about his performance in this movie.
I hope none of it ends up on the cutting room floor.
All right. Very quick recap on a long but worthwhile podcast. Darkest Hour, is it worth it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman. If anything is worth Gary, I'm tired of the story, all right? I'm tired of it, but Gary Oldman does it well.
It's worth it for people who really want to know whether or not, who want to have seen everything that's going to be in the Oscar list, on the Oscar list. So if you are one of those folks who wants to be able to know what they're checking off on their Oscar pool, you're going to have to see Darkest Hour and Gary's performance.
Shape of Water. It's the best movie of the week. Am I wrong?
No, you're
one
actually right.
One of the best movies of the year.
Oh, one of the best Fantastic. Movies of the year over here. And with the best actress, Sally Hawkins.
One with the runner-up best actress, Sally Hawkins.
Wonder Will. Some people think it's terrible. Some people think it's mid-grade Allen, and I'll take mid-grade Allen any day of the week.
No, I will. I will take a pass on mid-grade Allen. This is one wheel you do not want to jump on.
Take yourself to your computer. Pull up Chris Orr's article on Woody Allen.
And I do. I'm sorry. I have to mention.
Please.
From the WAFCA Awards, the Best Supporting Actress Award, the one that I was really glad, if Lady Bird was going to win anything, this was my pick, was Laurie Metcalf as Best Supporting Actress.
Laurie Metcalf is probably the best part about Lady Bird.
She is.
And it's still the wrong winner. No, it's Allison Janney. Allison Janney
was a very close runner-up for I, Tonya for me.
Are you saying you like comedic performances for your
I'm
actors?
Saying, talk this about is, making an impression. Allison Janney made an impression.
This was a very,
Laurie Metcalf was that mother. Yeah, okay,
this
she's
was
that
a
mother.
Very tough category.
They're both mothers, and which mother made the more bigger impact?
I'm just trying to pivot back to something I said earlier because it looks like we're going to wrap up that I never mentioned in the best actor
Please.
Category. I voted for James Franco for The Disaster Artist. A crazy comic.
As Tommy Wiseau with a capital Go Away.
And we love The Disaster Artist.
I have to say, it was just, he
voted for James
and it
Franco?
Was just in one register, really, the whole time. And I thought, am I really going to get, he does not a lot of nuance to that role.
No.
And yet it was so consistently
it's
funny
perfect.
And entertaining.
It's so spot on.
And I thought, Gary Oldman is great. We all know he's great. But, you know,
right.
I just wanted to give a little nudge to a comedic performance, and Franco is
But
great.
It's so,
I agree with that.
You know, Churchill's dead. And you had to go and you had to watch the video. How did he talk? What did he do? James Franco, he didn't, but he could
he's
be accused of mimicry slash mockery.
Sure.
Possibly.
Sure. Well, they
it's on the borderline.
Right. But come on. Really, best adapted screenplay, was anything adapted nearly as good as the Disaster Artist was.
That was my vote.
I think to me that was one where I'm like, oh, it was a tough category because I thought the Disaster Artist, if you had to pick.
I voted for your boy, Hampton Fancher.
Yes. Yes,
Christian, my boy. We haven't brought that up.
Christian is the only one who loved the Hampton
Fancher. Yeah, you loved Escapes and you didn't vote for Hampton Fancher.
Escapes was a documentary, and again, this is a monumentally epic cinema clash because of these awards, but I almost forgot. Best documentary went to Jane.
Yeah.
Which that was one of the most disappointing.
Really?
Yeah, Jane's.
I liked Jane.
No way.
Jane is a National Geographic TV movie documentary.
Not better than that.
And
it's gathered footage.
Faces, places.
So much better.
Is so much better.
That's a good film, too.
And
that's a close call. But really. We're all outraged, weren't we, that I called him Morgan about Trumpeter. Lee Morgan was not nominated for Best Documentary.
No one saw that, man.
I missed my window
no
to say that earlier.
No one saw it anyway.
Liked it very much.
But nobody's going to
I can't believe Jane
that
won
one.
That category. I thought you would vote for Step because you praised Step all year.
Step was the audience favorite. Step was my favorite in terms of just sort of your crowd-pleasing documentary. But Faces Places was hands down
my
top pick. Yeah. And I don't think enough people saw it. And so I think that's why it fell off.
I didn't see it until a couple weeks ago.
But for me, Jane was just a standard. Aside from the fact that they had this great found footage.
Yes.
That's wonderful. But the documentary was not very good. And so you have this amazing footage put into a documentary that should have been so much better. And so I was so disappointed to see that win because I just felt that that was basically you're awarding found footage that could have been put together by anybody.
Well, someone had to get that 100 hours and splice it. But
he did a good job of putting that together and interviewing her in the present.
Yeah, but it's still a Nat Geo. It felt like a Nat Geo
documentary. Really?
Story
about her marriage and things that happened.
Because I didn't care about any of that. I just wanted to see the apes.
Godard made Agnes Varda cry.
I just wanted to see the chips
He didn't come to the door.
So that was one that we kind of hadn't hit upon was the fact that Jane won Best Documentary.
Yeah,
and I was disappointed by that. I still say Faces Places.
I'm with you.
The best one in Step for just a crowd pleaser. That's a good one to see.
All right, I really don't want to leave this before you get everything out. Did we miss anything on these awards?
I feel like we didn't. We didn't really talk through all of them, right? But is there anything else that we need to?
Well, what will surprise no one is the Post won Best DC Movie representing Washington DC. People were very surprised that the Post did not get more love from the DC film critics, and I think that's us having integrity, saying it's a fine film, it's not a phenomenal film.
It doesn't rise to the level that Spotlight did to give that the win.
Spotlight
is better than the Post. All the President's Men is still a classic compared to the Post. And so while I think, Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks are always going to deliver you a good movie, their performances are always going to be solid, but there's very little drama in this movie.
I like the Ellsberg part more than that. Because it's so heavy-handed when they're like, publish or stop the press. It's so heavy-handed.
I like
the Daniel Ellsberg portions better.
It was
so beautifully directed.
So are you saying the Post
is
better than Spotlight?
No, I'm not saying that. I love that both those movies are good. They're different.
I'm glad
years.
It was made.
I am astonished, as much of a Spielberg fan as I am, that he is in his 70s and we are watching it happen. Martin Scorsese in his 70s makes The Wolf of Wall Street,
Silence.
These are amazing. You don't have to like or everything about them. These are amazing movies.
Yeah.
George Miller made Mad Max Fury Road. I think he was 70 years old. Steven Spielberg, or close to it, is in his 70s now, and he's made some good movies recently. I don't dislike much. But this movie I thought this movie was just beautifully filmed.
It's
a bunch of interior shots, but what he does to keep it humming along, moving that camera, tracking that camera, maybe too self-conscious in some ways, but I loved it.
I really liked it, but I did not love it. So it didn't rise above any of the others that I would have put out.
Spielberg
there.
Got outtracked by Joe Wright. Joe Wright outtracked him. Sorry, Spielberg.
And we really should We should mention Brooklyn Prince for the Florida Project winning Beth Youth Performance. That was a tough one because I
voted for Millicent Simmons.
I voted for Jacob Tremblay for Wonder because I still think that Jacob Tremblay is like the actor to watch for the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Hey, he was in The Book of Henry.
He was Wasn't in the that Book a great Henry.
Movie? It all comes back to The Book of Henry.
But and in Room. Not The Room, but Room. And so I just, that was a tough category. I did love the Florida Project, but I did like Brooklyn Prince's performance, and I liked Willem Dafoe's performance in it. But
I had to sell you on that, Bob. You remember that? I had to sell you on
it. You had to totally sell me on it. And I still, I mean, I hated Tangerine, and this is the same guy who did Tangerine.
God. I disliked Tangerine, so I was very delighted with it. Well, I was surprised at how much I liked Florida Project.
Is that how you felt when he said Hostels?
I was surprised to not hate. I was surprised to not hate the Florida Project.
I really liked it.
Yeah, and I thought Willem Dafoe was great in that. But so it's always really hard with the... with these awards, because as we always say, it's all so subjective. Mm. And
it's a small group, so technically your vote counts. It just feels like when you don't win anything, it doesn't count.
It just kind of feels like somehow, you know, sort of like our current state of government and how sometimes elections don't quite go the way you expect.
Yeah. All right. Christian, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks
it's a really long
me.
Christian, I know you, if you don't know DC geography, he drove in rush hour traffic tonight from Arlington, Virginia to North Bethesda, Maryland, which is... that's a trek and a half, so good on you, Christian.
It was worth it. I just wanted to say one other thing. You know, this is, I was checking back on my WAFCA history. I've been a member for 10 years.
Mm.
The welcome email was May 29th, 2007. I found it back in my back in my records, and I thought, I've been doing this for 10 years. And I'm pleased with how the awards came out. I usually am. You know, usually some favorites don't make it, some surprises. This Get Out decision... this is a good decision. I'm very, very happy with it, even though it wasn't my vote.
Good.
I'm just excited. I think it's going to maybe be a shot in the arm for our group, and it's a worthy winner, and that's what matters.
Hey, we've been doing Cinema Clash for about 2 years now, I think, so this is really just our second roundup, I believe. Mm. And so, you know, it only took us 2 years to gain... listeners such as Christian.
So you're going to stick around for year 11 is what you're saying.
Yeah, so we'll have you back. It'll be less than 2 years before we have you back on the podcast.
All right. Happy to be next here. Week, quick plug, The Last Jedi. Anna?
Yes.
All right.
I'm taking a long lunch break to go see the screen.
I won't tell. All right, well, thank you very much for listening. On behalf of the Cinema Clash, I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
And I'm Christian Hammaker.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.